is Spectra.
Alternative Medicine. Homeopathy. Secret Society. Hypnosis. The Paranormal. Alternative Energy. UFO. Abduction. The Weird. The Wild. And the Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. This is Scott Jordan here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing this week, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
Well, what do we got on the plate this week?
Well, tonight we have Dr. Stoyan Sarg, a Canadian scientist that was born in Bulgaria. He holds an engineering diploma and a PhD in physics, and until 1990, he worked as a space research scientist in programs coordinated by the former Soviet Union in collaboration with the European Space Agency. From 1990, he worked for 2 years as a visiting scientist at the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico that was being operated by Cornell University. At the end of 91, he immigrated to Canada and continued to work in space research projects until 2008. And currently, he is with York University here in Toronto. Dr. Sarg developed supergravitational unified theory that was reported in a number of international conferences. A review of his monograph is published in Physics in Canada Journal. He has written 3 books in English and 1 in Cyrillic language. His recent book, Field Propulsion by Control of Gravity, Theory and Experiments, is an original approach for understanding the physics and technology of UFOs. And Dr. Sarg is convinced that the development of his new technology will open a new era in our space travels. Welcome, Dr. Sarg. How are you?
Thank you. I am fine. Thank you, Tom and Scott.
Nice of you to join us. You've been a long time in these scientific institutions. Where you worked in space programs coordinated by the former Soviet Union and the Western Space Program. Do you find any differences in the area of fundamental research?
I am fortunate to work in different systems. Until 1990, I worked in Bulgaria, but I was involved in the research programs coordinated by the former Soviet Union. There was a research program that involved a socialist country during that time. The program name was Intercosmos. And this program involved scientists from these East European countries, and I worked in that time in the Bulgarian Academy of Scientists of Sciences. And in fact, during my work of this, and later when I immigrated to Canada, but before that I used to work 2 years in Puerto Rico, I found some differences in the research that is provided from that time and the research that is provided here.
Yeah, working in Russia and in Canada as well.
Yeah, in Canada. In fact, I have been involved in space research in Canada from 1991 to maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. Now I'm in a different department, but I keep my contacts with this, and it's a field that you could never abandon.
Right, of course. In the description for your show, we have UFO propulsion. I think Tom has some questions about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to find out how you came about in this idea of the field propulsion by control of gravity. How did this come about?
During my work, even in the early years, from time to time, I heard some information about such phenomena, but the curious thing is that in the in the scientific community, this topic is not discussed for a number of reasons. Later I found why it is not discussed even today. But this early things that I heard later helped me when I was more involved in the researching first in the physics problems, and this UFO phenomena in fact is very useful because it involves some different kind of thinking and searching. So it is not just right away suddenly to begin this research. It was some kind of long time keeping me.
So gradually over time, while you know your life as a scientist, you were hearing about the UFO phenomena, and that's how it developed. Now, being a scientist, why do scientists avoid discussing the UFO phenomena? And even if they do, talk about it to themselves, why is it out in the mainstream? Why would they talk about it in a negative way?
It is something that I understood later. In the beginning, I just heard sometime that about this phenomena, but even they say it is something not serious because the description involved effects that are not explainable by the law of physics. And if you accept the law of physics like something proving, like a definite truth, you could throw this idea away to investigate the UFO. But during this long year of my research in different institutions, I found that there is something, when they say this contradicts the law of physics, why don't examine are this law of physics a final truth, or it is a description of some frame, and there is something beyond this frame of description that may give another explanation. And it appears that it is really this, but during my research, later research, when I migrated here in Canada, I was able to acquaint with much more literature. I investigated even the history of physics from the 17th century, and I found that there is some difference in the thinking of the physicist during the 19th century and 20th century. And this difference appears to be something very fundamental. It reflects to the concept of space.
Okay.
So, Stoyan, mentioned that there's some fundamental error in our thinking. Why is that?
Yeah, this is something about our concept of the space. And this concept is adopted in the beginning of the 20th century. Before that, from the time of 16th century, another concept has been traditionally accepted, and it started from the vision of the René Descartes that the space is not empty but has some kind of substance. And this concept has been accepted and used by many great scientists, including even Newton, Faraday, Maxwell built his famous electrodynamic theory based on this concept. But in the beginning of the 20th century, when something is new was found about the quantums of the photons, of the quantum features, they didn't find explanation, and they adopted so-called Copenhagen formalism. They adopted some rules expressing the physical laws by mathematical rules. Then the quantum mechanics started to develop pretty well, that they accepted that this is the way they should follow, to follow these rules. Some of these rules, for example, that the speed of light is constant. There is no question why it is constant. You never could hear such questions in any of universities. And this is just one example. There is also other rules. But my opinion during this long research in the history of physics and after development, my theory is that quantum mechanics is a very good but mathematical theory. It is not physical theory. It doesn't explain thoroughly the physical world. So it works in some narrow field. And if you try, in fact, it is a basis of the modern physics. And if you try to explain, for example, the behavior of the UFO by the modern physics, you are stuck because it could not explain, and you say it contradicts to the law of physics. But then we have to look for another framework of understanding of the concept of space that is very, very basic. Another thing is that all our vision about the micro world and the universe is based on this concept, and every experiment observations treated through the prisms of the concept of space. And if you try to change this concept, it may affect a lot of abstractive built theory that is so much now that it is not easy to make a change. It could be much easier to make a change one century ago when this problem has been discussed. After that, it is overlapped with so many other theories that there is some formal opposition for changing the concept of space.
You write in your book your understanding of the theory of ether. Could you explain a little bit more about that? Ether?
Yeah. The ether theory that has been accepted at, until the 20th century. In fact, they envision some kind of very fine flu, but in fact, it is not the real physical model. There was not a real physical model to explain, for example, despite Maxwell used the ether, and he mentioned that a material ether should be searched, but there is not such a model suggested at that time. So even Einstein, that published his famous papers in the beginning of the 20th century, he also speak about ether, but his explanation of the special relativity and his equations, in fact, doesn't need to use the concept of ether. But strangely, when he developed another theory, the general relativity, in about 1920, he returned to the concept of ether, but he envisioned still that the ether is not of material origin. And there is one book that it is written only from a manuscript from Einstein, that he even say that without ether, the general theory is unthinkable. And many even scholar, physicists and professors, scientists don't know about this, but this book exists. It is translated in English.
Okay, that's interesting. So Einstein was talking about it as well. Could you tell me what is the origin of space-time?
In fact, from the concept that I developed about the ether, this concept has have not been investigated never in the history of physics. It begins from very, very low level of the microcosmos. It is in the so-called Planck scale, that is in the order of 10^-34 from the 10^-34 of the meter. It is extremely low. And okay. Then the based on the only two fundamental particles and based on the one law that is I call supergravitation, and this law is distinguished by the Newton's law, these fundamental particles start to build structure only based on this law, and they become this is a three-dimensional structure that becomes more complex until they reach to the structure of the elementary particles that build the atomic nuclei. But in the same substructure of the elementary particles also build the structure of the space, or you may call it ether. I call it cosmic lattice, because it is not a gas, it is not something chaotic. It is very, very organized structure with very specific property. And this structure explains the quantum mechanics, it explains the relativity, special relativity, general relativity, but it gives a different vision about the microcosmos and even about the universe. And because this structure, when you become familiar with this structure, you see that this structure propagates the light, and you see why the speed of light is exactly constant. Also, we see that this structure propagates not only the light, it propagates the Newtonian gravitation. And this is the very fundamental issue, because I found the connection between the electromagnetic waves from one side and the gravitation, Newtonian gravitation. And this later lead me to vision that it is possible to control the gravitation.
Okay. What do other scientists right now think when you presented your papers and your books out there with your theory? What response have you had on that?
From one side, because my theory, it is very detailed presented in my major book, and this book is 600 pages. But this book, in fact, is referenced in the Journal of Physics of Canada, official book review exists.
What's the name of that book?
The book is Basic Structures of Matter, Supergravitation Unified Theory.
Okay, and, carry on.
And this book, in fact, this book was initially published in 2001. In 2002, I archived this book in the National Canadian Library, and then follow some publication, initially in the Physics SA journal that is devoted to fundamental question in physics. Then I have a presentation in number of international conferences, initially in 2005 in one conference organized by NASA in Huntsville, Alabama. Then another conferences I have been in Russia in 2006. There was a big interest about this. Even the Russian Academy took my book and put in the Russian catalog in the Russian Academy of Sciences. And I have been in a number of conferences in United States, two conferences in Society for Scientific Exploration and one conference in Natural Philosophy Alliance the last year.
So the information is getting out there. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, the information is exposed.
But how has the response been from other scientists like yourself? Like what have they said to you privately, or you know?
In fact, if you speak about the theory itself is very difficult to be accepted. Because unless it is only theoretical. Because My theory is completely original, but it starts from a new vision about the microcosmos and later lead to the universe. So it is something that many that, for example, that develop some kind of theory, they, for them, they look something different and something not acceptable, because it leads to the different vision. My vision about the elementary particles and the atomic nuclear structures. My vision also about the universe is different, and the facts that's difficult to accept. But my vision about the universe is completely different. There is not a Big Bang. There is not expanding of the universe. Many different things.
Okay. So you remove the in your theoretical research, you remove the Big Bang theory and the expansion of the universe theory. That can't go over very well with traditional scientists.
Yeah, in fact, I didn't remove. I just suggest the explanation. But the explanation, because it is different, it is not easily said. But by the way, there is so much problems in the Big Bang theory that even 4 years ago, they established international conferences every 2 years, crisis of, in cosmology. And it has been 2 or 3 such conferences so far. And even in the...
Crisis
in cosmology. Okay. Because the Big Bang theory doesn't contemplate with the results that later provided. It appears some... absurd.
And does this have to do with the redshift?
The redshift is one thing that was accepted. The main thing is that in the Big Bang theory, because they accepted that the space is pure empty, and my theory is not empty, it is filled with this cosmic lattice, they say because it is pure empty, it is homogeneous. There is no difference in space in our galaxy, in the next galaxy, and so on. So, then what we see as a redshift, it's a Doppler shift. But from my theory, it appears different because the space is in different galaxy, a little bit different, and every galaxy has its own cycle, own evolution. Then appears that the light propagating through many universities when passing from one galaxy to another galaxy get a little bit redshift, loss of energy. And this gives illusion that the universe is expanding. And this is a... But the effect is very big, and that is difficult to accept.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So how is it that the galaxies begin and then go through a life cycle and then die out?
Yeah,
or what's
it appears it has a life cycle. And what we the galaxy has a phase of active life that we see. And there is a hidden life that we don't see. In the active life, the galaxy has, individual galaxy, this has a cosmic lattice. And all the light, all electromagnetic waves propagate through this cosmic lattice, so we see this lattice. But there is a hidden cycle when the whole galaxy, including the lattice, collapse. And it undergoes to the hidden phases of recycling of the all matter, including to the elementary particle. This recycling process becomes a process of the new crystallization of the new particle, and then explosion, and then appears a new galaxy. That's why every individual galaxy has a super heavy nucleus in the center.
Black
in the
hole.
Center, that they say black hole. In fact, it is a matter of super dense matter, where in fact is the fabric that this happens. And also there is many observations that confirm this. For example, there is a so-called globular clusters, thousand and thousand stars are compact very closely. And this goes global clusters, it appears that there is some stars about 20 billion years old. But they say that the universe is about 12 billion. How it could happen? It happened because these global clusters are remnant from the previous galactic life that escaped this collapsing, and after that they become integrated in the new galaxy, because but they have some difference, and that they become so different, very different than other.
Okay.
But this is well, just one. There is many other things.
Storian, in your theory right now, is the universe infinite, or what's your view?
Yeah, according to my theory, the universe is really infinite. But what does say infinite? It contains of maybe billions of galaxy, and our more powerful telescope maybe didn't reach to the same level, but they don't see what is beyond. But from the other side, it could not be infinite, because it is this super dense matter that is in the very bottom level of the matter organization, I say, it perhaps is the constant, but it is a huge. And but the main difference in my theory that there is not, I don't envision a big bang and expanding universe, but I envision local banks for every galaxy. So there is a bank when the galaxy collapses, and there is a bank when the new galaxy is born. And this, but this age of the galaxy is perhaps maybe from 20 to 15 or 20 billion years. So it is pretty large. But there is one effect that is detectable. They call it gamma rays burst. This is the most powerful event that the scientists try to figure out what is it. I think this event, in fact, is the signature of either a new galaxy or collapsed galaxy.
Okay, I see that. I can see where that comes from. So if there wasn't a big bang where the infinite amount of space was condensed into a small point and then expanded outwards, how did the universe begin, or did it begin? Is there a beginning?
It is much far beyond our question, because if the universe is not expanding but static, we always see something to start from something initial.
Right.
But it's difficult to say. But it is absolutely, I don't agree, I'm absolutely not logical, the whole universe to start from a point, and even they say mathematical point, it is unbelievable.
Right, it's a theory, isn't it? It's just a...
Yeah. It's a theory, and this is theory that we could never go and to verify. Even you could not go to see to other galaxy, are they move away or stay?
Okay,
be forever.
Right. So that it's a difficult thing, isn't it? And we're still working on that. I have a quick question. How is quantum mechanics related to the theory of relativity on one side and on and classical mechanics on the other? How does that work?
In fact, there is a big known problem in physics that there is not interconnection between the quantum mechanics from one side, the classical physics from the other side, and the cosmology and to the relativity. But from my theory, this connection exists. And why? Because my theory explains the quantum mechanical features by the classical way. Usually the scholars say this is impossible. And they say quantum mechanics contradicts to the law of physics. Contradicts to the law of, to the logic, to the human logic, but in fact, I am not agree with this. If something contradicts to the law of logic, human logic, I think it is indication that something is not observed to the full understanding.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you give us a rundown of your experiments to show how gravity works with this effect?
Yeah, the explanation of my experiment, especially for the field propulsion or control of gravity, from a point of view of my theory, is easy. But if I try to explain from the point of view of the existing physics, of the modern physics, it is impossible. And why? Because from my theory, I envision this underlying structure called cosmic lattice that is so fine that the distance between the separate knots of this structure is shorter than 10^22. So it is never could reach this just for directed observations. But once understanding this, and understanding that the Newtonian gravity is propagated through this structure, then one could envision a proper modulation of this structure that the propagation of the gravitational force could be changed, could be slightly modified. And this is the namely that I wanted to do with my experiment, and I get some successful experiment that show effect. I called gravito-inertial effect, and I demonstrated in the lab experiment.
Okay, we're gonna actually talk about your experiments in the laboratory, but right now we've got to take a quick break, okay?
Okay.
If you suffer or know someone that suffers from back pain, knee pain, or any other chronic or sports-related pains, you need to visit LapingoProducts.com. Dealing with pain can affect every aspect of your life, which is why our products are designed to bring you real relief. Our products are not only easy to use, effective, and safe for the entire family, but our prices are competitive and offer a complete satisfaction guarantee. Visit LapingoProducts.com, real life solutions for pain-free living.
AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is your gateway to over 500 products ranging from herbs to pain relief products, health, and well-being. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is dedicated to educating and empowering you to make the best possible informed decisions about what products you can use to improve your health and well-being. Visit AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com and bring about change in your life.
And we're back. Okay, we were talking about, we're talking to Stoyan Sarg, who's done a lot of work in physics. He's also done some lab work with, working with anti-gravity, or can it be termed as such, anti-gravity, Sarg?
You could call anti-gravity, because usually this research is called anti-gravity, but to be more accurate, I call it control of gravity, because anti-gravity usually means that it is in the opposite direction of the gravity to the center of the world. Mm-hmm. But from my envision this effect, you could make some kind of force field that could be in any direction, not only in the line of Earth gravity, opposite in the line, but in any direction.
Okay. Tom?
And you've created this experiment in a lab. And
yeah,
you were able to show that how this effect works, correct?
Yeah, I created this experiment. In fact, to put a few words about the physics of this experiment, because the physics is very important. I use a plasma around the object. In fact, there is a research in this field, and this is under a very different name of the plasma research, electrogravity, magnetogravity, magnetohydrodynamics, electrohydrodynamics. And other researchers, in fact, they found that there is something existing, but they didn't envision the physical mechanism. In fact, nobody than me envisioned the existence of gravito-inertial effect. Usually they think that it is interaction of the ions and electrons with the other parts of the atmosphere with surrounding field that makes some kind of small propulsion. But from my point of view, it is a gravitational effect. And a bit different is that they don't envision that this effect could be used outside of the Earth atmosphere. And this is very important because I see that this effect could work outside of the atmosphere. So it could be used as a principle, completely new propulsion. I call it field propulsion. It's a completely new kind. It is not a jet propulsion system. It has different features.
And how did you show that it would work outside of Earth's atmosphere?
In fact, I didn't. My experiments are in the atmosphere.
Okay. But so it's the it's not the ion wind.
Yeah, it is not the ion wind, and I tested this by two experiments. But one experiment that is more obvious is I put the so-called plasma thruster in the closed volume. And I activated this thruster on and off, and the closed volume cylinder started to move. If it is an ionic wind, it is not possible to do this motion. And I have also another experiment that I'm convinced that it is not an ion wind. The effect is very weak, okay, because I have to work with the high voltages. And the bottom level of this high voltage is 25,000 volts in the normal air. Mm-hmm. So the this effect, to investigate further this effect, it requires a special environment. It is not easy to reproduce in just in the desktop.
Right, right. So you've done the experiments inside of a tube.
Yeah.
That was that you had movement within the tube, so that discounts the it's the ionic wind theory. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I put a thruster inside of the tube, transparent tube, mm-hmm, and I hang the electrodes of the tubes, so when I activate the thruster, the whole tube is moving.
Okay.
So this is indication that this is not ion wind, because ion wind in this case could not interact with the external atmosphere.
Right, right,
it
right.
It is enclosed. Yeah.
It's enclosed. Okay. So that, and by the way, those, we have a video of Stoyan's experiment on our website under past guests tomorrow. It'll be under past guests. You can just look up where it's Stoyan. You see a video there of him doing his experiment. Okay, so you've done that. And what now is the difference between, how would you describe the difference in propulsion or maneuverability of the UFO craft inside and outside the atmosphere? And the reason I ask this is because several reasons, not just the propulsion. The crafts that have been filmed for years and years and years, they wobble a bit, don't they, Tom? They sort
yes,
of,
they do.
They wobble back and forth, and then when they get pictures from the space station and from the outside the atmosphere, there's none of that. That doesn't occur. You don't see wobbling. You just see straight movements. And why is that? How could you explain the difference of the maneuverability of the craft inside and outside the atmosphere?
Yeah. When I envision this effect and make experiments, I investigate a lot of literature, the physical evidence, and I'm convinced that this effect, the principle of this effect is working, that, for example, if the craft is outside of the atmosphere, it needs a very little bit gas around it to be activated to make a plasma. So this plasma even is released from the craft itself, but it is activated around the craft. And this plasma has to be activated asymmetrically around the craft. Also, it is usually activated in pulses, because some kind of memory effect in this physical vacuum. And when it is activated asymmetrically, there is a force field in the proper direction. But when but it is very important that the not every gas is so much suitable. For example, hydrogen or helium, one of the most suitable gases. But when it is in the Earth atmosphere, then the Earth gas is not very suitable, and they have to release their own gas. But the whole system, because not so stable, because interferes of the Earth atmosphere, and for this reason they wobble. They wobble, and you see
they wobble. Yeah.
Plasma.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now the other thing we have, and Tom, I think you'll agree with this, is UFOs in the Earth's atmosphere can very rapidly change colors from red to green to blue to yellow. Do you agree with that, Tom? I mean, you've seen a lot of that, right?
Yeah.
They change colors. Is there an explanation for that?
Yeah, there is an explanation of this, because they may carry not just one gas. They may carry a few type of gas. In fact, before I make experiment, I make a plasma research experiment with a vacuum, not a very high vacuum, but a vacuum enough that I put different gases. In this case, this kind of plasma discharge that is very specific, I call it heterodyne resonance mechanism. It has very specific features. You could see different color, and I observed different color really. Even in my book, in the back cover, I put some picture of the gas inside of the partial vacuum.
So, Storian, now, if an object was to be encompassed with this type of energy that we're talking about, and it was to be used for travel outside of our space, is there what would be the limitations, or is there any limitation?
From my investigation, theoretical, I see still the limit of the speed of light. I still did not envision that this barrier, but maybe even this is something. But I think that there is a limit of the speed of light. But another thing that I envision, that this kind of propulsion mechanism will fight the inertia. It will change not only the gravitation, but also the inertia. Or in other words, it could change the mass of the object. And that means change of the gravitational and inertial mass. And in a properly designed spacecraft, the people that's inside may not feel the sudden acceleration. It could obtain a huge acceleration in the properly designed spacecraft, and the inside column may not feel this acceleration.
Now, is it possible with this sort of approach to be able to do higher than the light speed, or is light speed pretty much the theory that we have, that that's the highest there is?
This is something that difficult to answer, but I could tell you another thing, that there is the speed of light is a limit, well-known limit for electromagnetic waves. But there is such kind of waves that highly exceed the speed of light. And there is investigation, there is one book and research of one Russian scientist, his name is Nikolai Kozarev. 30 years ago, he made very unique experiments with a telescope, and he registered the speed that is a thousand times higher than the speed of light from some stars. But this is not electromagnetic wave, this is just some that he detected some small signature of different kind of red. Sometimes they call longitudinal wave, some call scalar waves.
Yep,
they are not
scalar waves
investigated. They are not enough investigated.
Right, Bearden talks about that. Also, the Kozarev talks about Nikolai, and he also did a little bit of work in torsion as well.
Torsion field?
Yes.
Yeah. Torsion field is another area that is developed in Russian science, but torsion field it is not just so much connected with this longitudinal wave and hyperlight propagation.
There is some
experiment even in the journals. There is for existence of faster than light propagation. But there are very few experiments and not enough elaborated technologically.
Yeah, well, we're only human. Tom, do you have any?
I want to sort of go a little bit off the topic. There was some information that came out recently by yourself about a Russian scientist and his idea of what happens to comets and the type of material that's within
the comet.
Oh, that's
right. I read that article. Very good.
Yeah. In fact, I met this Russian scientist. He's Viktor Kotev in 2006, when I was in St. Petersburg presenting reports in the Space-Time Gravitation Conference. I think this was ninth annual conference of this society. I think every 2 years. It is from the all time from the time of the Soviet Union. And it is a very interesting report. And this scientist, in fact, he claimed that the comet's antimatter, initially even I didn't believe of this, but later he sent me one article. Later when I had the time, I clearly review his argument and article, and then start to investigate. I found also from my theory, initially I didn't develop this option, but I see one option of the process of formation of the galaxy that is in my theory described pretty in details, and it is leads to the very well-defined conceptive phases, that there is a possibility to make a whole galaxy from antimatter. And if it is from distance, you could not distinguish. It could provide the same spectral signature. You could not distinguish. But because in my theory I mentioned that the galaxy has all life, then we could not exclude that some portion of the previous or from other galaxy had been left in our galaxy. That's antimatter. And this antimatter is not exactly the same that in the particle physics they claim antimatter. But this antimatter must be pretty stable unless it is not in contact with its matter. But even in contact with the matter, that is, this was strange, and the academic Shan Kotev says that annihilation doesn't take right away when the two substances in the solid form, they have to be in ionized form, then the annihilation takes very, very violent feature. When I started to investigate the comets that pass near the sun, that the comets that in fact bombarded by NASA and other, in fact a lot of features, in fact in the favor of this hypothesis, a lot of features.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really good.
And what was the he had given some warning to the Russians science fields as to what the effect may be when the comets testing.
In fact, if his hypothesis is right, the warning is very has been to be taken very seriously. And what we see, for example, the comets passing near the sun or falling on the sun, there is a few features from the Soho satellite, I think one show in this article, that comet passing near the sun, that there is a huge violent interaction between the tail of the comet and the solar wind. And you know that the solar wind is just protons and electrons, and if the comet has an opposite, it very violent annihilation process. Also, many things that puzzled the scientists, they found even in some comet X-radiation, they could not explain this. Even I have been investigator of the Halley Comet in 2004-2006. There was something strange, but it was was not explained why the jets from the comets exit with the super sound velocity. It is very strange phenomena, and even comets far away. A lot of things now, if you start to investigate the comets, you will think, and they puzzle the scientists. So a little bit different that the comets contain antimatter, because the violent process becomes if antimatter and matter connected together in the solid form, and then the comets start to bleed, because the insertion, if the comet is from the antimatter inserted at matter, there is a process of the bleeding and throwing the jets, and this hit the comets, and very strange, the comets so far from the sun, they should be in very, very low temperature, but they have a temperature like our room temperature. Many unexplainable effects.
Right, and this theory goes to helping to explain that.
So the fact that they bombarded some of the or at least one of the comets could have a potential problem for us here, no?
In fact, Khotaev expressed his warning about experiment for bombarding the comet, because he say the result of this bombardment that the thousand and thousand pieces from particles to few kilograms has been thrown in different directions, and they are difficult to track, and some of them may fall on the Earth atmosphere.
And what
can occur if antimatter were to come in contact with us?
Oh, it could. It depends of the size of the particle. But you know, there is one. There was one book that was released the last year. It is from Vladimir Rubtsov. It's about the Tunguska event, and he described very detailed the century long research on the Tunguska event that happens in 2008. And this event has been investigated very seriously from many scientists and recorded signature there is, and they prove that this has been this could not be a meteor. This could be a comet body that exploded about 5 kilometers above the ground, and they estimated the explosion to be between 20 and 50 hydrogen bombs in that time.
So it's possible it could have been some sort of fragment of anti-gravity.
Not anti-gravity, antimatter.
Antimatter, pardon me.
Yeah.
We got anti-gravity on the brain. You're going to have to excuse us.
Yeah, exactly. So if a size of a, let's say, a kilogram piece were to fall on Earth, what's the potential damage that it can cause?
I could not say that. I don't make a calculation about this field. I just the envisioning. But another thing is also that there was one comet about, I think, 8 years ago, I don't remember its name. It fell on the Jupiter.
Yes.
According to the previous calculations, the effect that show was thousand of times larger than expected effect.
Yeah. Shoemaker-Levy?
Yeah, Shoemaker-Levy comet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. That caused an amazing effect.
At the same time, meteor fall on the Earth, and they don't cause such problems. Meteors for a few kilograms, they don't have such problems.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Why
because
is that?
Because the meteors, they are from the matter. They are not antimatter. They are the same matter like ours. So there is not an annihilation process.
Okay. Okay.
Well, so that makes sense, though.
No, it does. There's certain meteors you have to be cautious of.
Yeah, it's true, because, I mean, look at all the meteors that hit, you know, almost, you know, every planet, moon, Mars, you know, and ourselves, you know, over the years. And yes, yeah. A large enough chunk can cause, obviously, a fairly big problem, but it's not total annihilation. But when that one went into Jupiter, it seems that it distorted even the red spot, which is humongous.
It's enormous, and the Jupiter they consider almost a sun-like body.
Exactly. Yeah,
body. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So getting back to the UFO subject, just for a moment. Do you suppose that that there has been work done on this in governments and work on, you know, say retrieved crashed vehicles, that they have been doing work in this and are just sort of keeping it to themselves, or what's the case?
The information I know, it is just leaked by the internet. But summarizing this information from many sources, I think that this is a very interesting subject, and they perhaps worked. They worked, but from all the information that I read, they investigate the problem by the empirical way, by reverse engineering. It is without understanding the underlying physics. And without understanding the physical principles, in fact, the research and development is a thousand times less effective. In fact, with my understanding, I was able to make experiment that NASA didn't make such experiment for $100,000. I know some published experiment from NASA. It is a huge difference when you know the physical effect. For example, before Faraday invented the electromagnetic induction, could somebody make occasionally a motor, electrical motor? No, nobody. But after that, now one schoolboy at 10 degree A could make electrical model.
Right.
Because knowing the physical principle is a huge advantage.
And then there's Tesla as well, and the work that Tesla did and his contribution to the... Does his work in any way connect to what you're doing, or have you read Tesla's work, and are you inspired by it?
Oh, yeah. I read a lot about Tesla work. In fact, I was so interested because Tesla was one of the, not only of the first, that investigated this kind of different waves that they call scalar wave, longitudinal waves. And he investigated with the presumption of understanding that there is an ether. He has his own concept of the ether. That is, I think, is very close thinking when you start to thinking in this way. And that's why he succeeded to make so many inventions. The plasma, the luminescent light, the neon lights, many things are his inventions.
Right. So he started out on the right path. Was the right way of looking at things, which is why he was so successful.
Yeah, he was so successful in this field. And he also envisioned the propagation of the electrical power. Now it is this way is not suitable because this kind of propagation of longitudinal waves, in fact, it invokes a lot of electromagnetic noise, and we could not use this way now with our cellular phones. But another thing, and I call this this research could be used in the field propulsion. That I discover, in fact, very close. I use, in fact, in the patent application that I make, I propose Tesla, three-phase Tesla coil to generate such kind of high voltage property electromagnetic that activate. But this is not for the Earth application. Even UFO technology is not for replacement of the airplanes. Many think that it could replace airplane. It is not. It has electromagnetic side effect. It has even harmful effect for the living organism in the close distance. So it is for the trips in the space, not for.
Is it possible to create some sort of shielding effect, though, if it was to be used for purposes here on Earth?
In fact, the UFO in the. You mean shielding effect from this scalar wave or longitudinal wave?
Yeah.
Especially for the UFO, it could not be shielded because it is workable effect. But if this some kind of technology is used in the another field, for example, in the States, this kind of technology, plasma activated, is used for purifying the water or killing some microorganisms. Then it could be used some shielding, special shielding effect for shielding from longitudinal waves.
Well, as far as if we're going to talk about UFOs, there must be some kind of shielding, because if there are occupants within the craft that are moving, they either have to be of a completely different biological nature.
Oh, the shielding is different. The shielding is different when it is inside or is outside.
Okay.
The inside volume could be easier shielded than outside the volume. I think you ask about the outside. Outside is not, but inside volume is possible to be shielded by the special design of the craft.
Of the craft.
Okay. So this could cause problems to health if you were close to the craft. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it has been cases that people apparently get some kind of unknown injury effects from the UFO, very close proximity. I think one in Canada, the Falcon case. I have only read another case in Brasilia.
Right, right. Okay, so there. Yes, we do know in the UFO literature that there's been some testing and some problems with health. I believe there's a. Do you remember the name of the case, Tom? The mother and the daughter, both.
The Cash Landrum.
Yeah.
Cash Landrum. Yeah. When the object was either being followed or carried by some helicopters when it passed overhead and they came out and they got affected by it.
Burnt the car too, didn't it? Burnt the paint off the car.
Yeah. Well, there was something similar to a burning effect. Yeah.
Okay. So.
And eventual sickness and so on. And,
maybe they have even some kind of field for protection and to turn on in case if they could be persuaded. Because in the literature, there's a case is that military fighters try to make or to hit the UFO, and they suffered of some kind of disintegration or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so with your experiment, I know that you've taken your experiment to a certain level, and that there is more that you can do with it, and... you need a bigger lab, and you need more energy. Is that correct? You've gone to a certain point, and now you want to take it to the next level.
Yeah, to take to the next level, because in this level now I just show existence of the effect demonstrated, but it is very weak. it is not optimized in order also to measure the some quality qualitative measurements. To take to the next step, it needs first a special environment lab and some funding, more significant funding, because it should be done in the professional way and also simultaneously to take precaution for the possible harmful effect. Mm-hmm. And I elaborate so, this.
So how big of an effect, or I mean, you were saying about you had 25,000 volts, but how much voltage would you need to create a bigger experiment and be able to show this in a much better way?
It may go up about 500,000, maybe half a million volts.
So
maybe 100,000. So, but effect is very dependent. It increases with the power, maybe power of third or between two and third with the voltages, and not only the voltages, but they used gas substance to activate, and also the activation mechanism of this electromagnetic wave. There's a lot of specific features in the design that is contemplated.
So in order to conduct this experiment on a larger scale, how much money would be needed to conduct it in a proper lab?
In the first case, no less than $100,000.
Okay.
So we needed just to make the next stage experiment and to show more measurable effect.
And such labs are available here in Toronto?
Such in the Toronto, Grand Toronto area, there is a place that could be fine for such proper lab.
You think the universities would be doing this and just covering and then, maybe I don't know the way universities work, but you think they'd be doing this experiment and, you know, funding it themselves?
Yeah, but not if it goes out from the norm of...
yeah.
I know
the university where I'm working, there is not such environment. And even many universities now, the high voltage equipment in many laboratories is thrown out because with these computers, the tendency to use very, very low voltages. So it's in a different direction. It's a different direction. It has to be some special facility.
Special type of lab, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we want to basically put it out to the public out there, or anybody who might be interested in getting involved with Stoyan, whether scientist or philanthropist or anybody who can help. They can get in contact with us, and we can put you on to Stoyan, or you can go directly to his website, which we will be having probably on the past guest page.
It's on the website now, yeah.
Yeah, and so we hope that your work can continue, and, you know, we can expect big things from it, and maybe that might be our future in, you know, the new approach to space flight.
Who knows? So maybe there's lots of universities all over the world. BBS Radio is listened to in every country. You never know who's going to pop up and say, you know, sure, we'll do that experiment.
Yeah, I think so. I think that in today, the superhighway information, in fact, in a number of places in the world could initiate something. It is a question. Could be here or could be somewhere, another place, because it's not possible to conceal something that already has been tested, some information. It is distributed on somebody.
You've already proven it in your lab experiments. You have.
Yeah, in my lab experiment, I just proved that there is a mechanism. I also discovered this heterodyne resonance mechanism that I see now. But my communication in the internet in a number of places in different countries, they investigate and get similar results. Not just for the propulsion mechanism, but this effect in the plasma that has not been envisioned before.
Right.
Affecting the plasma.
Well, we hope that your work continues, and we're going to support it with as much as we can, and hope to have you on again in the very near future. Yeah. And any individuals that want to get a hold of Mrs. Sarg, they can certainly contact us, and we will pass them on. And we're going to come to an end right now, and hopefully we'll see you guys again. I want to thank Mrs. Sarg.
Okay, thank you. I thank you, Tom and Scott, for this possibility to express my vision.
Yep. Hey,
my work.
I'm glad to have you on. You never know, Tom. I mean, with all the stuff coming out now with the governments that are putting their UFO files out,
yeah,
there does seem to be some sort of openness to this sort of thing nowadays. I mean, not so much 20 years ago. There was a video you sent me about a government that released all of their UFO files. What was that latest one? Was it
from Ecuador?
Ecuador, yeah, the Ecuadorian government. Man,
and,
that's
and it's some great stuff, and people should definitely check it out.
Oh, this is when this was released?
With the last few weeks.
Oh, so it is more recent than the Nooks and UFO disclosure in September.
Oh, definitely more recent than that. And I will be putting it up on the news page if people want to check it out. It was an absolutely brilliant video. Just amazing. The stuff that and what was interesting, just on a side note about that, was the government got involved. The president of the country wrote letters and to the guy, one of the lead investigators in UFO field, wrote letters telling the military, listen, you need to tell this guy everything you know. He's allowed to go on any military base, do anything he wants, take any reports he wants. It's really a quantum leap in UFO investigation.
Yeah, it's very interesting. In fact, we live in a very interesting era. New discovery. This could be greater than the great geographical discoveries, because it will pave a way to the space, to other planets, or to satellite of the planets of our solar system.
I totally agree. Sure. You know what? Humans are destined to be in space.
Yeah.
You know, every culture, every planetary culture has to go through an evolutionary process. And that evolutionary process, at some point, reaches colonization of space. Getting out there and doing your own thing, you know, and exploring new areas and doing research outside of Earth's atmosphere. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And there's no need or reason to be hung back on these crass energy systems that we're using now, and coal and nuclear and all of this stuff. It's just, we're so far beyond that if we just will do it. And I think that that's coming. I think that we're just on the tipping edge of that. And hopefully that there's people out there that will be open to your research and look into it a little bit further.
Okay, thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.